As we enter into worship, put away the pressures of the world that ask us to perform, to take up masks, to put on brave fronts. Silence the voices that ask you to be perfect. This is a community of compassion and welcoming. You do not have to do anything to earn the love contained within these walls. You do not have to be braver, smarter, stronger, better than you are in this moment to belong here with us. You only have to bring the gift of your body, no matter how able, your seeking mind, no matter how busy, your animal heart, no matter how broken. Bring all that you are and all that you love to this hour together. Let us worship together. We join together now in a time of meditation or prayer, spoken at first, and then for a time in the peace that silence brings. As we enter into silence, we remember the many connections that sustain and uplift us through this religious community. We remember those who preceded us, whose contributions built a free faith, who built this home for its practice. We remember those around us, whose continuing care in thought and deed is an ongoing blessing in our lives, keeping the dream of free religion alive in our time. We remember those who will follow us, the children presently in our care, and those not yet come to light who will inherit the work of our hands and hearts. In the silence now, we sit surrounded by these many connections, visible and invisible, that remind us every day that we are not alone.
The beginning of my sermon is actually adapted from the writings of my friend and colleague, Eileen Karpeles. Out of wood and stone, out of dreams and sacrifice, the people build a home. Out of the work of their hands and hearts and minds, the people fashion a symbol and a reality. May this house be truly a place of meeting. Meeting one with another in warmth and joy and openness, meeting one with another in courage and love and trust. May these walls know silence as 100 hearts search inward, each for its own small spark of hope that might otherwise be snuffed out in the noise. May the rain fall lightly on this house, the sun shine warmly, the winds blow softly, and bless it as a place of joy and peace. Today we're talking a lot about the congregation as a home, a place of joy, beauty, and peace. But I want to explore this idea of church and home by turning the coin over and looking at what it would be like not to belong to any community, not to have a home, to be homeless in the world. It seems to me that homeless persons, for whatever reason they are homeless, live lives that are parallel to ours. Depending on where we live and work, it may be usual to come into contact with them as we go about our routines. Whenever I have volunteered for organizations that try to make the lives of homeless persons more bearable, I have always been glad to get back to my normal life, whatever normal means. We go along parallel to one another, recognizing the presence of each other, but never or hardly ever having much communication or much in common, or so it would seem. Our parallel lives might not be as neat as we thought. Now, I learned geometry back in the Dark Ages, and then we were taught that parallel lines never intersect. But our more recent ideas of physics address the concept that all the universe is a sphere, and that some parallel lines do at some point intersect. There is contact between them somewhere way, way, way out there. I believe that what is true of the physical universe is also true of us, that we do all connect somewhere way, way, way out there, or maybe not so far out there. Now, just to establish my credentials, my credibility on homelessness, I want to give you a brief rundown of my situation. I have never been homeless. I grew up in a middle-class family, and my creature needs never went unfilled as a child. My parents, who were young during the Great Depression, were determined that their children would not have the same circumstances as they did. Consequently, although my brothers and I always craved things that the family could not afford, we were never in fear of real poverty and hunger. I have been poor by some standards, but never without necessities. As is the case with many graduate students, I knew what it was like not to be able to afford to go to the movies when I wanted to, or to eat in restaurants, or to buy clothing that didn't come from the campus thrift shop. After graduating, most newcomers to ministry deal with a crushing load of debt for some years. But I have always had a home in the sense that I am always paying rent or making mortgage payments on some dwelling or another. I have never wondered where I would lay my head at night, except for a brief time when I was an undergraduate and traveling. I am not homeless by any means. And yet if you ask me if I usually go home for the holidays, it takes me a while to figure out what is meant by home. Home is where I happen to be at the present moment. So you may ask yourselves, how can she reflect on the condition of homeless persons? What does she know about the life they lead? And how can she tell us that we hold things in common with them? I can say this because I know on an existential level what spiritual homeless means. In a poem called The House of Christmas, G.K. Chesterton says, "For all are homeless in their homes and strangers under the sun, and they lay their heads in a foreign land whenever the day is done." I have experienced, as many of you have, an absence of community, an absence of spiritual connection. I know the sense of falseness, of isolation, of instability, of impoverishment of spirit. It is a condition of being out of place in the world, of having no belonging place. One of our responsive readings in the back of the hymnal puts it this way: fellowship is life, and lack of fellowship is death. Fellowship is heaven, and lack of fellowship is hell. I am using community and fellowship interchangeably in this context. It is my belief that persons who are homeless physically and or spiritually are cut off from both community and fellowship. I also believe that there is not a single person here who doesn't know what that kind of homelessness feels like. Without community, we are alone in the universe. We humans are meant to be social creatures. Without community, we might survive from day to day, and we can see such survivors on our streets. But we have given up on life. Alienated, with an overwhelming sense of powerlessness and an utter lack of hope, As individuals, we can keep going, but we are doing it in spite of conditions that rob us of our humanity. What I would call spiritual homelessness is called lack of social capital in a book by Harvard professor and researcher Robert Putnam. His book, titled Bowling Alone, is well known, I'm sure, by many of you. It is quite a sturdy book, many pages. Putnam says that social capital refers to connections among individuals, social networks, and the norms of reciprocity and trustworthiness that arise from them. He quotes a reformer from 1916, that's 1916, who refers to social capital in some detail as, quote, those tangible substances that count for most in daily lives of people, namely goodwill, fellowship, sympathy, and social intercourse among the individuals and families who make up a social unit. The individual is helpless socially if left to himself. If he comes into contact with his neighbor and they with other neighbors, there will be an accumulation of social capital, which may immediately satisfy his social needs and which may improve the living conditions of the whole community. End quote. Social capital is both a private good and a public good. It involves networks of mutual obligations that, quote, foster sturdy norms of reciprocity. I'll do this for you now in the expectation that you, or perhaps someone else, will return the favor. It was Yogi Berra who offered the most succinct definition of reciprocity. Yogi Berra said, if you don't go to somebody's funeral, they won't come to yours. Trust him to have just the right words. Bowling Alone is based on life and history in the U.S. It is a source that helps me understand the congregations that I have served here and in another country as they question what kind of community they have created and what kind of community they wish to create. What I'm convinced of by this experience and my reading is that the homeless person on the street isn't all that remote from any of us. Our parallel lives do converge or can converge. That person could be any one of us. Without community, without spiritual resources that we develop together, we could all be that person. We are all of us seeking meaning, a sense of purpose, a certain stability and predictability. We also seek an identity that we can claim and believe in, that others will acknowledge. Community helps us to these characteristics. We create community in order to experience any significant quality of life. Here in this church, the various committees, activities, and affiliated groups engage many of us in their events. Each of these groups has as its mission, beyond other goals, to establish a home within the larger home of the congregation. The committees and activities are composed of congregants who do the work of the church, and in doing so, they create community. The members who participate in committees and activities have the possibility of staving off a sense of spiritual homelessness. They, by their participation, create meaning in their lives, create a sense of purpose, create a certain stability and predictability, and they establish an identity in which they can believe and that others acknowledge. During the brief time that I am with you, I want to encourage you to create more opportunities for connection, and I will say opportunities for healing here in this congregation. Now, recently, many of you filled out the promise cards that you were offered by the transition team at their table in the gallery. They asked you to write three promises that you make to others in the congregation and three promises that you would like others to make to you. You can see some of these written promises on the windows to your left as you leave the sanctuary here. Actually, they're the same windows as we used for your postings on the timeline a couple of months ago. These promises are the foundation for the covenant of healthy relations that the team is crafting with my consultation. Over and over, as I read the promises that you make and the ones that you hope to receive, it is clear to me that a main reason you attend church is to engage in community where you can be known and be in true relationship with others. In such intentional community, persons relate with one another in reciprocal ways and have a clear and cherished place in each other's lives. Another Sunday, I want to address how covenant groups, also known as small group ministry, enhance this sense of knowing and being known. Covenant groups offer the finest example of true community that I can imagine for this congregation or for any other. As more persons express interest, more groups can be formed, and this can be of great benefit not only to this church, not only to the participants, but also to the congregation as a whole. And on this subject, let me mention that the Open Minds Covenant Group, sponsored last night in House and Hall, and with childcare apparently throughout the building, one of the best examples of congregational community that I have observed in many a day. It was game night. Table games, UU versions of televised game shows with contestants of our very own, and including our very own Vanna White. Time to learn new games from experienced players. I learned a little bit about dominoes. Card games, refreshments, it was lots of fun and laughter. Thanks to the name tags, I learned the names of many persons whom I hadn't met before. It was a very fulfilling experience of community at its best. Lots of children playing the games as well as the ones, little ones in childcare. And this afternoon's crop walk will be another, as walkers, rain or shine, as walkers from the church carpool to the park and walk together for a good cause. Folks at the social action table can tell you all about it. For me, I believe that this church, covenant groups within it, and other liberal religious groups are an effective means of avoiding spiritual homelessness. I envision this congregation as a community of creative persons who have the power collectively and individually to change the course of destiny. This is the place where we can express opinions, grow in spirit and intellect, take action in the community when it is called for, and create newness and richness of life. All of this is opposite to the condition of homelessness. My dream is that this congregation and other groups be what political philosopher Hannah Arendt calls the space of appearance, where people exercise their freedom, where they establish creative community. My dream is that this church be a source of health by saving us from homelessness and saving the larger community from homelessness in the universe. So may it be.
Take courage, friends. The way is often hard. The path is never clear, and the stakes are very high. Take courage, for deep down there's another truth. You are not alone.